This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachel. Filmmaker James Longley has a knack for revealing both the inhumanity and the courage of everyday life under conditions of war and political chaos. As a documentarian and photographer, Longley has lived among ordinary families in some of the world's most dangerous places to get access to people in those places that is rarely chronicled on film. His documentary, Iraq in Fragments, was nominated for an Oscar. His upcoming project has him concentrating on schools in Afghanistan. James Longley is in Durham this weekend at Duke University. He is the artist in residence for a film screening. It'll be tonight at Full Frame Theater at the American Tobacco campus in Durham. James Longley is with me now. Welcome. Good to have you here.
Nice to be here.
You have made films. We've talked about some of the places you've been in. They are dangerous places. Why? What attracts you to this kind of work?
Well, I mean, why am I choosing these particular places? I'm choosing them because there are places where the United States is directly involved somehow, but we maybe haven't got a clear picture of what's going on. On some level, I consider it a kind of civic duty to go and try to illuminate the situation, to try to bring something back that will give people a better idea of what's going on. What is the culture really like? What do the people think? These are things that you might not get from just reading daily journalism articles in the New York Times. I think that's a different kind of journalism than what I'm doing, which is a lot more slow.
Well, talk about some of how that changes, because, you know, we enter all too easily these days into violence in Afghanistan and Iraq. Plenty of warnings about what would happen. It's all happening. It didn't take much education to know that Iraq would descend into this kind of thing, and yet we did. 80% of the American public allowed itself to be told things that it pretty much knew wasn't true. You have these, but that means that Americans had some vague picture. It was an abstraction, Iraq, Afghanistan. They're abstractions, they're not people. How much do you know about the people and culture before you go in to give us what amounts to a clearer picture of actual day-to-day life, the real human beings who make up these abstractions?
Right. Well, of course, you can spend a lot of time reading books and, you know, watching video material about the places that you're going to go. But in the end, the most useful thing really is to go there and be on the ground and try to put yourself in a situation where you can really absorb what's going on and be a witness to it. Now, it's always a trade-off in these kinds of places between, you know, being able to see what's happening and your own personal security.
Your most well-known film is Iraq in Fragments, and it's a film that profiles several people at the beginning of the Iraq War. Give us a sense, give us a profile of those folks in 2004.
Right. Iraq in Fragments is a film I made from 2003 until 2005, actually. So I was there. I came to Iraq prior to the war. I also thought it was a bad idea, and I went to Iraq with my local congressman from Seattle, Jim McDermott, who, along with a couple other people, were among the few who voted against the war and were opposed to it publicly. And, of course, you know, he experienced a lot of blowback from going to Iraq while Saddam Hussein was still in power. People said he was a sympathizer with it. But really all he was saying was, you know, we should stop and reconsider whether this is really a good idea for the United States and also for Iraq, that we should come here and invade the country. What are going to be the repercussions of that?
So tell us what you found. Tell us about these families who you spent this amount of time with.
Well, you know, in Iraq, I was living in a neighborhood near Mustansiriya University in an ordinary residential house with no security. And I was filming a boy who was working in a auto mechanic shop in an old section of the city, which was very mixed between Sunni and Shia, different groups. And, you know, there's a great deal of poverty and also resilience, I guess, among the families that were living there. They'd sort of seen it all before, but people, you know, justifiably were concerned about what was going to happen in the future. Now, this dictatorship that most people really didn't like had been toppled, but then it was replaced by a reign of insecurity and fear of a different kind.
Were they able to anticipate what, again, anybody? I mean, Colin Powell certainly anticipated this kind of thing when he said, you break it, you own it. And he knew what could be broken, and he knew that these radical elements could easily take control of a place like that. I mean, you don't like dictators, but the one thing they do is keep out radical elements, you know.
Right. Well, I think this oft-repeated Pottery Barn statement about you break it and you own it is really a distraction, a simplification of what's really going on. And I think a more accurate pithy line would be, you know, you break it and now you can't control it. So, and that's true, I think, in Afghanistan as it is in Iraq. It's just spun out of control. And now, you know, we've taken a situation, in, for example, in Afghanistan, where I've spent the last 3 years, a situation of kind of the end of a civil war in which the country had sort of become stabilized, yet stabilized under the Taliban. We moved the lines of that civil war back, and now if we leave, again, they will shift. I'm not sure what the utility is of engaging in those sorts of projects.
That has great political utility at home. Whether or not it has any international effect is, or what effect, and how expensive that'll be in the long run remains to be seen. You talked about resilience at one point, and you've been to Gaza, you've been to Iraq and Afghanistan, where there is a great deal of turmoil and trauma. So what do you see in terms of resilience, situations where we cannot imagine ourselves as Americans if we've never been there, and we can't imagine how we survive? How do people do it? What do you see?
Well, I think you kind of – you can imagine. Oh, you know, people try to imagine all the time in fictional ways, right, what happens when society breaks down. You know, people love to watch kind of like Armageddon style TV series and these kinds of things. And that's what you're really looking at in real life in a situation like Iraq or Afghanistan, where the stability goes away and suddenly everything is unpredictable. Now, you know, in Iraq, which, you know, say what you like about Saddam Hussein, it was a terrible dictatorship and really awful, and you had no political freedom in that situation. But at the same time, while he was in power, you could walk around Baghdad, you know, at 10 o'clock at night and no one would bother you because everyone was just terrified of the regime. So there was this kind of security, which doesn't exist now. Now, just moving from one part of Baghdad to another, you can be killed at a checkpoint, for example.
Right. And I think in documenting the lives of those people, you bring us these tensions and complexities. Which kind of insecurity am I able to cope with, and how we adjust to each? It's not an either or, this kind of the simplistic view that Americans seem to take, that if we go in there, we'll just change everything and then we'll all be democratic and life will be good.
Right. Well, take Afghanistan as an example of our, you know, idea of imposing democracy, or sort of saying, you know, here is democracy. Isn't it wonderful? They've just had an election last spring. The two competing parties couldn't agree about who won the election. In fact, they had the most expensive recount, full recount, first ever in history of a national election, where they had thousands of people in aircraft hangars on the edge of the city sorting through ballot boxes. And at the end of the day, they didn't even announce the result of that recount because they were so terrified that if they announced the result, the country would split into a northern government and a southern government, precipitating a new civil war in Afghanistan. Right now, the only thing holding Afghanistan together is U.S. pressure, sort of the carrot of saying, well, I'm the stick. I think probably these politicians in Afghanistan were informed that, you know, if they didn't play by the rules, that they wouldn't get any of the money that was going to be coming in. And that's really why their main interest in being in power, as far as I could tell, is to collect the money which is coming down the pipe.
Well, and then you put your finger on it. You cultivate a political class who's focused more on the United States and what it wants than on its own people, because you've cultivated that class on account of your involvement, the way you're involved.
Right. I think, you know, we often – our, you know, the United States is really an extraordinary country. And every time I go away and I come back, I'm reminded of that. But when it comes to our foreign policy, I think oftentimes we make decisions that are not really well informed and based on, you know, rational thought, or which are not really far looking. We don't really think about what's going to happen 10 years from now.
Well, tell us how you and I suppose part of that, and this gets back to maybe the power and the importance of documentary filmmaking and any kind of journalism of this sort. I mean, the reason you can get away with that kind of fast and loose reasoning in the United States is because the people themselves aren't terribly well informed. So you can spin a story that has been spun to us so often, and it'll be accepted by 80% of the people on account of they haven't paid too much attention up to now to the culture of Iraq and Gaza and Afghanistan.
Look, the country, I mean, we just don't know. You know, if you ask someone 15 years ago, you know, what's going on in the Gaza Strip, what is life like there? No one will be able to tell you because no one has made that film and shown it to everyone. It's just a mystery. It's like a big dark area. You know, what is Afghanistan really like? You know, nobody knows that. It's hard to imagine it. The world is a complicated place. You know, the thing about the United States is we're so involved, and yet we know so little.
You're here at Duke because of you're an artist in residence. You've got a photo exhibit on display right here at the American Tobacco Campus at the Power Plant Gallery. Tell us about the photos.
Right. So the photos at the Power Plant Gallery are mostly large panoramas of an old neighborhood in Kabul and a few shots from outside of the city. And they're images that I made in multiple exposure and put together as a single long strip of image that, you know, I wanted to show kind of in more detail to use that wide panoramic format to give a broader kind of visual context to what I was photographing, not just to single out, you know, a particular person or you know, to be able to turn the camera in a broad semicircle around and really see the space and what was happening. And also, when you photograph that way, there's actually a time separation between your images. You're taking 9-12 photographs, and as you do that, time is passing, things are happening. So sometimes you'll see a person on one part of the photograph, and they'll reappear in a different part of the photograph as they're moving through space.
So the panoramic experience is only available at the Power Plant, but we do have photos at our website, stateofthings.org, and you can get some idea. You're also working on a film about a school in Afghanistan. Tell us about that.
Right. So I've been filming for the last 3 years in an ordinary government-funded school, maybe first to 10th grade school in Kabul, Afghanistan. And it's really an eye-opening thing to spend that much time in a place and really see how the education system works, and to use that as a point of view to get into the society. You know, in documentary filmmaking, a lot of times it's a question about practicality and access. What are you able to film? But then you also have to choose, you know, your perspective. From what angle do you want to see the world? You know, the easiest thing for an American going into Afghanistan usually in the past has been to embed usually with foreign soldiers or with a foreign NGO, because then suddenly the language barrier slips away. You no longer have this cultural barrier. You're filming soldiers. You kind of relate to them. It's much more difficult to make a film in a language that you don't understand and try to immerse yourself in a culture which is very, very different from your own. But that's the angle that I'm trying to take. Because it's more difficult and it's done less, I feel there's more value to it because it's not redundant.
What are some of the challenges to education these days? And you were in Kabul, right? So this is not all Afghanistan. Obviously, this is a rare environment in the nation of Afghanistan, Kabul.
Right. Kabul is a bubble in Afghanistan. That's where, you know, most of the money has gone into Kabul, all the new buildings and the reconstruction. A lot of it has gone directly into Kabul and then from Kabul into people's pockets and out into the Gulf and so on. But, you know, Kabul has enjoyed a kind of economic prosperity, which you don't see necessarily elsewhere. Kabul... It also is a place where, you know, it can be quite dangerous, but most of the time it seems pretty safe. I think Afghanistan has a reputation of, you know, being a place you wouldn't want to go because of the danger. But actually, I don't think Kabul City in terms of ordinary street crime and that kind of thing is any more dangerous than New York City.
I'm talking with documentary filmmaker James Longley today on The State of Things. He is in Durham. He is an artist in residence at Duke and has a screening of the film Iraq in Fragments tonight at 7 o'clock at Full Frame Theater at the American Tobacco Campus in Durham. What about the challenges? It may be safe, relatively safe, on the streets of Kabul, but what about the challenges to education? Is there enough economic security to, say, take time out and go to school?
Well, there are a lot of problems. The children themselves are often working to support their families, and they may not have time to be serious students or to attend school regularly. Their parents may not see the value of it. It really depends. A girl might be engaged by the age of 13 or 14 or 15, and once she's engaged, then it becomes something shameful for her to attend school, because once she leaves the house, then, you know, there's an assumption that something could happen to her, and it becomes very difficult. So those are some things. Also, the teachers are making very little money, and most of them have to keep down two or three jobs in order to make a living. So the amount of time and energy that they can invest into teaching is very limited.
There are obviously physical challenges and sometimes dangers in the kind of work you do, but also just the challenge of getting the job done under duress in 2003. As you said, when you started in Iraq, the technology was much different and you weren't allowed to photograph. So tell us how you got it done.
The technology?
Well, I mean, now you can use an iPhone. Right. I can slip in my pocket. So if they say you can't take pictures, try to stop me.
Right. Well, I mean, in a security state, it's a problem to take pictures using anything. Mm. But in a situation like Iraq, the government was overthrown and there was no government during the time that I was filming. No proper government, no proper security services. You were kind of on your own. It was an anarchic situation. As long as the people that you were filming allowed you to do it, then you could get away with it, you know, as long as you could stay alive.
You had a little handy cam, I guess, going.
The camera I'm using now in Afghanistan is bigger than the one I used in Iraq. I'm kind of going in the opposite direction. But, you know, you find a way to deal with the new technology as it emerges.
Well, I have time for one last question. It's a speculative one about this whole business about how we get informed. These days, everybody does have a smartphone, and the revolution, if not being televised, is certainly on YouTube. Does that create an industry, a place for – I mean, obviously, citizen journalists are throwing up the pictures everywhere, but there's no context, and it's a little hard to do the fact-checking. Is there a place now for a kind of curator of publicly presented, you know, sort of social media? If I'm in the midst of the riot and I send up the video, there's no way to contextualize that. But it does seem to me that we could now become curators and editors of that vast, now growing library of social media documentation.
Sure, why not? I mean, there's so much stuff available now on YouTube. I mean, for myself, of course, I'm trying to take an approach, a very long-term, careful approach to filmmaking in order to do something that can't just be done by someone with an iPhone in a couple hours. I'm spending years and years filming and translating the things I film. And a citizen journalist isn't going to do that. So, you know, there's so much media out there in small bits and pieces, but I think there's still a reason to spend time to make bigger projects where you spend enough time that you can really put something together which has a kind of meaning deeper than simply observing a single moment or an event. You can provide more context. And as a filmmaker, you spend enough time to understand the situation better. I mean, you're going into countries that you're not really familiar with before you go. And it's a huge responsibility to represent another culture to your own.
James, what a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
James Longley, an Academy Award nominated documentarian. He's in Durham this week as part of an artist residency. He's going to be screening his film Iraq in Fragments tonight, 7 o'clock, Full Frame Theater at the American Tobacco Campus in Durham. We'll have details on our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, we're going to take a look at the greatest rivalry in college basketball, Duke versus UNC. I didn't have to say Duke versus UNC, did I? I did, though. Stay tuned.